The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Graphic Audio presents DC Comics Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Be careful, Barry.
Don't worry, I'll be right back. My God.
Why am I brought from universe to watch his destruction?
Anyone have any idea what this is about?
I am the Monitor, and I brought you here to save the multiverse.
Only then, in a single, swift, and surprising stroke,
I will kill the man I love.
Damn you! I just wanted to see her one more time!
This is war, Superman.
No!
Why are you fighting me? You're already dead!
I need more power! I need more strength!
It is time for you, your world, and your universes to die!
Iris.
Crisis on Infinite Earths and all names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics. Copyright 2009 DC Comics. All rights reserved.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Well, that's funny. The door's open. Hello? Miss Sally? Sally? Sally, wake up! Please! Please wake up!
Oh, smoke?
Stay right here, Miss Sally. Just hang on, okay?
Lapeer, Moore, and Daggett. Never heard of them. But they're damn sure gonna hear from me.
Take them damn guns off, and I'll show you what a real man can do.
I'll take them off anytime you're ready, donkey face.
About right now, cowboy. Outside.
Suits me, lard ass.
All right now. Are you ready to get your...
I just blew the bank building, John.
Goddamn heathen! Come on, you sunny scum!
Now we all find out something I've always known.
What's that? Your Majesty.
Who's the better man, of course?
Hell, Davidson! I've known that since the first time I laid eyes on you. You couldn't shine my boots.
Forward, troops! Advance and wipe out the Mongols!
Let's go, boys.
From Big Rock, Colorado to Keene, New Hampshire and back again. Smoke is blazing, a bloody trail of retribution. In Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man 4, Revenge of the Mountain Man. Available now from Graphic Audio.
And now, for our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents...
Yeah, I reckon we waltzed right into a heap of trouble again.
What's the matter, old-timer? Don't you like having a target painted on your back?
William W. Johnstone's Sidewinders.
Yeehaw!
narrated by Ken Jackson, with performances by Tim Carlin, Mort Shelby, Terrence Aselford, Andy Clements, Kate Foster, Joe Brack, Christopher Graybill, Tim Getman, Jeff Baker, Thomas Penny, Dylan Lynch, David Coyne, Nanette Savard, Richard Rowan, and Bobby Aselford.
Scratch Morton and his trail partner, Bo Creel, were having a lively argument as they rode along a draw in a rugged stretch of Arizona territory.
All I'm saying is that a man who ain't prepared to lose hadn't ought to sit down at the table in the first place.
You didn't have to rub his nose in it like that. That cowboy probably wouldn't have gotten mad enough to reach for his gun if you just stayed out of it.
Stayed out of it? Hell! He practically accused you of cheating. I couldn't let him get away with that, old-timer.
There was a certain irony in Scratch referring to Bo as old-timer. The two men were of an age. Their birthdays were less than a month apart. It was true, though, that Bo was a few weeks older. And neither Bo nor Scratch was within shouting distance of youth anymore. Their deeply tanned, weathered faces, Scratch's thatch of silver hair, and the strands of gray in Bo's thick, dark brown hair testified to that. The Arizona sun had prompted both men to remove their jackets as they rode. Scratch normally sported a fringed buckskin jacket that went well with his tan whipcord trousers and creamy Stetson. He liked dressing well. Bo, on the other hand, usually wore a long black coat that, along with his black trousers and dusty flat-crowned black hat, made him look like a circuit-riding preacher. He didn't have a preacher's hands, though. His long, nimble fingers were made for playing cards or handling a gun. He had been engaged in the former at a saloon up in Prescott when the trouble broke out. One of the other players, a gangling cowboy with fiery red hair, had gotten upset at losing his stake to Bo. Scratch, who hadn't been in the game but had been nursing a beer at the bar instead, hadn't helped matters by wandering over to the felt-covered table and hoorahing the angry Waddy. Accusations flew, and the cowboy had wound up making a grab for the gun on his hip.
Anyway, it ain't like you had to kill him or anything like that. You probably had a headache when he woke up from your bending your gun over his skull like that, but you could have woke up dead just as easy.
And what if that saloon had been full of other fellows who rode for the same brand? Then we'd have had a riot on our hands. We might have had to shoot our way out.
Well, now it wouldn't be the first time, would it?
That was true enough. Trouble had a long-standing habit of following them around, despite their best intentions. Friends ever since they had met as boys in Texas, during the runaway scrape, when it looked like old General Santa Anna would wipe the place clean of the Texicans who were rebelling against his dictatorship. Bo and Scratch had been together through times of triumph and tragedy. They had been on the drift for nigh on to 40 years, riding from one end of the frontier to the other and back again, always searching for an elusive something. For Scratch, it was sheer restlessness, a natural urge to see what was on the other side of the next hill, to cross the next river, to kiss the next good-looking woman, and have the next adventure. With Bo, it was a more melancholy quest, an attempt to escape the memories of the wife and children taken from him by a killer fever many years earlier. All the fiddle-footed years had dulled that pain, but Bo had come to realize that nothing could ever take it away completely. After the ruckus with the red-headed cowboy, they had drifted northward from Prescott toward the Verde River, the low but rugged range of the Santa Marias to their left. Some taller, snow-capped mountains were visible in the far, far distance to the northeast. Flagstaff lay in that direction. Maybe they would circle around and go there next. It didn't really matter. They had no plans except to keep riding and see where the trails took them.
I think we ought to find some shade and wait out the rest of the afternoon. It's getting on toward hot as hell o'clock.
You're right. Where do you suggest we find that shade?
He waved a hand at the barren hills surrounding the sandy-bottomed draw where they rode. The only colors in sight were brown and tan and red. Not a bit of green. Not even a cactus. Scratch rasped the thumbnail along his jawline and shrugged.
Yeah, that might be a little hard to do. Could be a cave or something up in those hills, though. Even a little overhang would give us some shade.
I guess it'd be worth taking a look.
They had just reached the slope of a nearby hill when both men heard a familiar sound. A series of shots ripped through the hot, still air. The popping of revolvers was interspersed with the dull boom of a shotgun. Bo and Scratch reined in sharply and looked at each other.
That sounds like trouble. We gonna turn around and go the other way?
What do you think?
The two drifters from Texas dug their boot heels into their horses' sides and galloped up the hill. The shots were coming from somewhere on the other side. Bo was riding a mouse-colored dun with a darker stripe down its back, an ugly horse with more speed and sand than was evident from its appearance. Scratch was mounted on a big, handsome bay that was somewhat dandified, like its rider. Both horses were strong and took the slope without much trouble. Within moments, as the shots continued to ring out, Bo and Scratch crested the top of the hill and saw what was on the other side. The rocky slope led down to a broad flat, crossed in the distance to the west by a meandering line of washed-out green that marked the course of a stream. A dusty road ran from the east toward that creek, and along that road, bouncing and careening from its excessive speed, rolled a stagecoach. The driver had whipped his six-horse hitch to a hard gallop, and for good reason. Thundering along about 50 yards behind the stagecoach were 8 or 10 men on horseback, throwing lead at the coach. The two drifters brought their mounts to a halt at the top of the hill as their eyes instantly took in the scene. Even in the bright sunlight, Bo and Scratch could see spurts of flame from the gun muzzles. A cloud of powder smoke trailed after the pursuing riders. As if the circumstances of the chase weren't enough to convince Bo and Scratch that the men on horseback were up to no good, the fact that they had bandanas tied across the lower halves of their faces to serve as crude masks confirmed that they were outlaws bent on holding up the stage. Scratch reached for his Winchester, which stuck up from a sheath strapped to his saddle. Bo pulled his own rifle from its saddle boot. He levered a round into the Winchester's firing chamber and smoothly brought the weapon to his shoulder.
We taking cards in this game?
I reckon. Since we don't know the details, might be better if we tried not to kill anybody.
I figured you'd say that.
The two of them opened fire, cranking off several shots as fast as they could work the levers on the rifles. The bullets slammed into the road in front of the masked riders, kicking up gouts of dust. The men were moving so fast, it was hard to keep the shots in front of them. And one of the bullets fired by the Texans burned the shoulder of a man's mount and made the horse jump. That got the outlaws' attention. They reined in briefly as Bo and Scratch stopped shooting. It was their hope that the masked men would turn around and go the other way, but that wasn't what happened. Instead, the gang of desperados split up. Three of them dismounted, dragging rifles from their horses as they did so, and bellied down behind some rocks. The other seven took off again after the stagecoach.
Well, hell, that didn't work. We should have killed a couple of them.
Come on. They're gonna try to pin us down here.
Sure enough, the three men who had been left behind by the rest of the gang opened fire then. Bullets whined around the heads of the Texans like angry bees.
Damn it to hell!
They heeled their horses into a run again, following the crest of the hill as it curved to the west. The outlaws continued firing at them, but none of the bullets came close now. The hill petered out after about 300 yards. Bo and Scratch started downslope again, angling toward the wide flats and the road that ran through them. They glanced over their shoulders and saw that the three men who had tried to neutralize the threat from them had mounted up again and were now fogging it after the rest of the gang, which had carried on with its pursuit of the stagecoach. In fact, the outlaws had cut the gap to about 20 yards, and from the way one of the men on the driver's box was swaying back and forth and clutching his shoulder, he looked like he was wounded. The other man, who was handling the reins, looked back and appeared to be slowing the team.
He's gonna stop and give up! Those Al Hoods got their blood up! They're liable to kill everybody on that coach!
They're mad at that! We won't hold back this time!
Bo had rammed his Winchester back in the saddle boot. Now he unleathered the walnut-butted Colt on his hip.
Yee-haw! Now you're talking!
Scratch drew one of the long-barreled, ivory-handled 36-caliber Remington revolvers that he carried. Both men opened fire as they veered toward the road. The hurricane deck of a galloping horse wasn't the best platform for accurate marksmanship, but Bo and Scratch had had plenty of experience in running gun battles like this. Their flank attack was effective. A couple of the outlaws were jolted by the impact of the drifter's slugs and had to grab for the horn to keep from tumbling out of the saddle. Despite having a heavy advantage in numbers, the masked outlaws began to peel sharply away from the road. They threw a few shots at Bo and Scratch, but didn't put much effort into it. The Texans slowed their horses as the would-be robbers abandoned the chase, picked up the three stragglers, and galloped off to the east.
We going after them?
Have you gone loco? With 5-1 odds against us? I plan on thanking my lucky stars as they decided it wasn't worth it to rob that stagecoach after all.
Yeah, we winged at least a couple of them because I saw the varmints jump.
Yeah, I did too. Let's go see how bad that fella on the stage is hurt.
Bo inclined his head toward the coach, which had rocked to a halt by now, with thinning swirls of road dust rising around it. The wounded man was still conscious. The driver had climbed down and was helping the other man to the ground. As the hoofbeats of the Texans' horses rattled up, the driver turned and pulled a gun just when they had reined in.
Hold on there, son. We're friends.
Yeah, in case you didn't notice, we're the hombres who got those owl hoots off your tail.
The driver nodded and holstered his gun.
Yeah, I know that. Sorry. I'm just a little proddy right now.
You got reason to be. How bad is your friend hurt?
The driver was a young man, probably in his mid-20s. He wore a brown hat and a long tan duster over denim trousers and a blue bib front shirt. A red bandana was tied around his neck. His wounded companion was considerably older and sported a brush of bristly gray whiskers. He had lost his hat somewhere during the chase, revealing a mostly bald head.
How bad does it look like I'm hurt, damn it? Them no-good buzzard spawn busted my shoulder.
The right shoulder of his flannel shirt was bloody, all right, and the stain had leaked down onto his cowhide vest. Crimson still oozed through the fingers of the left hand he used to clutch the injured shoulder.
Take it easy, Ponderosa. Sit down here beside the wheel and we'll take a look at it. Might not be as bad as you think it is.
Oh, it's bad, all right. I've been shot before. Reckon I'll bleed to death another few minutes.
I don't think it's quite that serious. My partner and I have had some experience with gunshot wounds. We'd be glad to help.
You're much obliged. If you give me a hand with them.
Don't rush me, boys.
Bo helped the driver lower the old man called Ponderosa to the ground. Ponderosa leaned back against the front wheel, while Bo pulled his vest and shirt to the side to expose the wound. Under Ponderosa's tan, the bearded, leathery face was pale from shock and loss of blood. While Bo was tending to the injured man, Scratch glanced inside the coach.
No passengers, huh?
Well, not on this run. Not much in the mail pouch, either. If those outlaws had caught up to us, they would have been mighty disappointed. My name's Gil Sutherland, by the way.
Oh, Scratch Morton. My pard there is Bo Creel.
And I'm Ponderosa Pine. Given name's Clarence, but nobody calls me that unless they want to tangle with a wildcat.
Well, we wouldn't want that. Good news, Ponderosa. That bullet didn't break your shoulder. I think it missed the bone and just knocked out a chunk of meat on its way through.
You sure? It hurts like blazes, and I can't lift my arm.
That's just from the shock of being wounded. We'll plug the holes to stop the bleeding. I think you'll be all right. How far is the nearest town?
Red Butte's about 5 miles west of here. That's where we were headed when they jumped us. This is the regular run between Red Butte and Chino Valley.
Let's get Ponderosa here on into town, then. He needs to have a real doctor look at that wound just to be on the safe side.
That's assuming there's a sawbones in this Red Butte place.
Yeah, there's a doctor. Don't worry, Ponderosa. We'll take care of you.
Ain't worried. Just mad. Mad as hell. I'd like to see Judson and all his bunch strung up.
Bo used a folding knife he took from his pocket to cut several strips of cloth from the bottom of Ponderosa's shirt. He wadded up some of the flannel into thick pads and used the other strips to bind them tightly into place over the entrance and exit wounds.
Who's Judson?
The Rance Judson is the leader of the gang that was chasing us.
Him and those varmints who ride with him been raising hell in these parts for 6 months now.
If folks know who he is and that he's responsible for such deviltry, why don't the law come in and arrest him?
We're a long way from any real law out here, Mr. Morton. Well, there's a marshal in Red Butte who does a pretty good job of keeping the peace there, but he's not going to go chasing off into the Badlands after Judson's gang. That would be suicide, and he knows it. We all do.
Bo finished tying the makeshift bandages into place.
Old bones are stiffer than they used to be.
Yeah, tell me about it. And I'm quite a bit older than you, mister.
Let's get you in the coach. Won't be all that comfortable, but it should be better than riding up on the box.
Wait, wait, just a doggone minute, and I signed on to be the shotgun guard, not a dang passenger.
I'll ride shotgun the rest of the way. Where's your greener?
Oh, on the floorboard where I dropped it when them polecats ventilated me, I reckon.
I don't think Judson and his men will make another try for us. You don't have to come with us into town.
We don't mind.
Yeah, truth to tell, all this dust has got me thirsty.
You got at least one saloon there, don't you?
Several.
Then what are we waiting for? Let's go to Red Butte.
Once they had loaded the still-complaining Ponderosa Pine into the stagecoach, Beau climbed onto the driver's box next to Gil Sutherland, leaving his horse tied at the back of the coach. He had Ponderosa's double-barreled scattergun across his knees. Scratch mounted up and rode alongside as Gil got the vehicle moving.
Used to be a Butterfield coach, didn't it?
How did you know?
You can still see some of the red and yellow paint on it in places.
We didn't strip the paint off on purpose. The sun and the dust and the wind in this godforsaken country took care of that for us.
We?
My father was the one who started the stage line. Runs from Cottonwood to Chino Valley and on over to Red Butte where the headquarters are. There's another line that runs from Flagstaff down to Cottonwood and then on south. But there was no transportation from Cottonwood west to the Santa Marias until my father came along. Chino Valley and Red Butte were growing fast because of all the ranching and mining in the area. So he thought it would be a good gamble that they needed a stage line. He figured some other settlements might spring up along the way, too.
Sounds like a worthwhile gamble. How's it working out?
Not so good.
Because of these outlaws? Folks are too scared of being held up to ride the stage?
Well, it didn't help when Judson and his bunch started raising hell, but that's not all of it. Those other settlements never sprang up. There's just Chino Valley and Red Butte, and the mines played out for the most part. There's only one still operating at a good level.
So there's not as much business as your pa thought there would be.
That's right. It's been a struggle to make ends meet. It didn't help matters when my father got sick and died.
You're running the stage line now?
My mother's in charge. I do what I can to help, just like when my father was still alive. I got a younger brother, too, but he, let's just say he's not much for hard work and leave it at that.
Bo didn't say anything in response to that. Clearly, there were some hard feelings between Gil Sutherland and his little brother, and they might well be justified. But Bo knew it usually didn't pay for a fella to stick his nose into family squabbles.
Thanks for pitching in back there. Judson's bunch would have caught us in another minute or two, and there's no telling what they might have done, especially when they found out they weren't going to get much in the way of loot.
It looked like you were about to stop and let them catch up.
That's right, I was. I knew we couldn't outrun them, and the way Ponderosa was only half conscious and bouncing around in the seat, I was afraid he might get pitched off and break his neck. I was hoping they'd just take the mail pouch and let us go.
Is Judson in the habit of doing things like that?
They've killed a few men during their holdups, but only when someone tried to fight back. Like when they hit the bank over in Chino Valley last month.
They're not just stagecoach robbers then?
No, they've rustled cattle and run them south across the border into Mexico. They robbed the bank, like I said, and they raided the Pitchfork mine and stole an ore shipment that was about to go out. They stopped the stage half a dozen times, I guess, even though they've never made a very big haul at it. Killed a driver and a guard, though, so nobody wants to work for us anymore. Ponderosa and I have been taking all the runs ourselves lately. Now he's going to be laid up for a while, more than likely. I don't know what we'll do. Shut down, I guess.
Bo didn't say anything to that, either. He had some thoughts on the matter, but he kept them to himself for the time being. The creek that Bo and Scratch had seen from the top of the hill turned out to be a narrow, shallow stream, not much more than a twisting thread of water in a gravelly bed. Gil drove across it at a ford.
This is Hell Creek. Not much to look at, but it's the only water this side of the Santa Marias, and it never dries up, no matter how hot the weather gets.
Spring fed, I reckon.
That's right. North of here in the ranching country, it's bigger.
Sulfur springs, too, unless I miss my guess.
That's how it got its name, from the smell of brimstone. Not very pleasant, but the water doesn't taste too bad. You get used to it after a while, I suppose.
The slope was very gradual at first, but became more pronounced. More tufts of grass appeared, and even some small bushes. Bo saw trees up ahead, where the foothills of the Santa Maria Mountains began. A little over an hour after they left the site of the attempted holdup, the stagecoach arrived at Red Butte. Bo and Scratch saw why the settlement had gotten its name. a copper-colored sandstone mesa jutted up from the ground about a half mile north of the town, which had a main street, half a dozen cross streets, and a couple of streets paralleling the main drag. The buildings were a mixture of adobe, lumber from the trees growing in the foothills, and brick that must have been freighted in from Flagstaff or some other big town.
Not a bad-looking place. Wouldn't exactly say that it's booming, but don't look like it's about to dry up and blow away either.
There are enough ranches along the Santa Maria's, both north and south of town, to support quite a few businesses. Throw in the pitchfork, too, and folks do all right. They just don't have much need of a stage line except to deliver the mail. We probably won't have that contract much longer.
What do you mean by that, son?
Gil didn't answer. The young man was busy bringing the stagecoach to a halt at the edge of the settlement, in front of a neatly kept adobe building with a wooden barn and some corrals behind it. Someone had planted cactus roses on either side of the three steps that led up to the shaded porch attached to the front of the adobe building. The bright yellow roses were blooming, providing a welcome splash of color in an otherwise drab setting.
Whoa, steady now.
The front door of the building opened while the coach was still rocking back and forth on the broad leather thoroughbraces that supported it after coming to a stop. A dark-haired woman, wearing a long blue dress with tiny yellow flowers on it, came onto the porch. She pushed back her hair from her face, and relief showed in her eyes as she looked at Gil. That relief was fleeting, lasting only a second before it was replaced by worry. She looked at Beau, a sober, almost grim stranger riding with Gil, and at Scratch, another stranger who had reined his horse to a halt alongside the team.
Where's Ponderosa?
I'm right here, Miss Abigail, with what's left of me anyway.
For God's sake, Ponderosa, what happened to you?
Judson's men again, Mother. They hit us about a mile the other side of Hell Creek.
The woman, who was obviously Abigail Sutherland, turned her head to look up at her son as she was helping the wounded man from the coach.
Did they get the mail pouch?
Not this time. These two strangers came along and lit into Judson's bunch. They wounded a couple of the outlaws and ran them off.
Ain't not in time to keep me from getting plugged, though.
Scratch had dismounted. He came around the back of the coach, leading his bay with the reins in one hand. He used the other hand to sweep the cream-colored Stetson off his head and gave Abigail Sutherland a big, toothy smile.
Scratch Morton, at your service, ma'am.
Thank you for your help, Mr. Morton. And your friend is?
That's Beau Creel. Now, don't let that look on his face fool you, ma'am. He ain't as sour in disposition as he appears. Well, not quite.
I'm pleased to make your acquaintance, Mrs. Sutherland. Just wish it was under better circumstances.
Yeah, so do I. In case anybody's forgotten, I got a dang bullet hole in my carcass.
Yes, and I'll take you down to Dr. Chambers' house right now. Can you walk all right?
Yeah, I reckon. Got hit in the shoulder, not in the leg. I was a mite dizzy earlier, but I'm feeling better now.
Can you take care of the team, Gil?
Sure. Where's Dave?
I don't know.
Abigail got an arm around Ponderosa's waist to help support him, and they started along the street toward the rest of the settlement.
We'll give you a hand with those horses, son, won't we, Bo?
Yep.
Bo placed the shotgun on the floorboard where he had found it. Gil got the team moving again and drove the stagecoach around the adobe office to the barn in the rear. He took the coach all the way into the barn before stopping. Scratch followed, leading his horse. Bo and Gil climbed down from the box. Along with Scratch, they went to work unhitching the horses. Watching the sure, practiced actions of the older men, Gil was impressed.
You fellas have worked around stagecoaches before, haven't you?
We ran a way station in Kansas for a while.
And we hired on as Jehus and shotgun guards in other places. Fact is, you won't find many jobs on the frontier that we ain't done at one time or another. Ain't that right, Bo?
Except for donning aprons and clerking in a store. I don't think we've ever done that.
And we ain't gonna.
When the team had been unhitched and the horses turned out into the corral, Gil reached into the compartment under the driver's seat on the coach and pulled out a canvas pouch.
I'll take the mail down to the post office. If you're going to be staying around Red Butte for a while, feel free to unsaddle your horses, give them some grain, and put them in the corral with the others if you want to.
Yeah, what do you think? We going to be staying in these parts for a while?
We don't have anywhere else we have to be. Red Butte looks like a pretty nice little town.
That's what I was thinking. Much obliged for the hospitality, son.
Gil lifted a hand in farewell and left the barn while Bo was untying his dun from the back of the stagecoach.
I noticed you started calling that boy son as soon as you got a look at his mother. Thinking about settling down with the widow Sutherland, are you?
Me? Well, I mean, you gotta admit, Bo, she's a fine figure of a woman.
It was a pretty picture, her standing there on that porch with the wind in her hair, those cactus roses blooming at her feet. But we don't know a blasted thing about her, other than the fact she's got a couple of sons and a stage line started by her late husband. We don't even know how long he's been gone. She may still be in mourning.
Wasn't wearing black.
No, she wasn't. That's true.
And she's got a whole heap of problems on her plate from the sound of it. Might be we could give her a hand with them.
Nobody's asked us for our help.
Well, give it time. Anyway, ain't you curious about what's going on around here? You always did like to get to the bottom of any trouble we ran into.
Yeah, that's true. I guess we could hang around for a while, see what happens. Like I said, it seems like a pretty nice little town.
And a pretty nice little woman, too.
Bo just rolled his eyes and shook his head. There were a couple of rocking chairs on the porch of the adobe office. Bo and Scratch walked around the building after tending to their horses and sat down in those chairs to wait. They weren't sure what they were waiting for, but that was a pretty common situation. Years of drifting had taught them to be patient. They didn't have to wait long for something to happen. Three men came down the street and stopped in front of the headquarters of the Sutherland Stage Line. One of them was young, 20 or 21, more than likely, and his brown hair and the cast of his features resembled those of Gil Sutherland. Bo figured he and Scratch were looking at the heretofore missing Dave Sutherland, Gil's younger brother. The other two men were older, but still in their 20s. One was tall and scrawny, with a shock of straw-colored hair under a battered, pushed-back hat. The other was short and broad, built like a bull, with an animal-like dullness in his eyes and on his face. He wore a derby over dark hair that grew down low on his forehead.
You hombres looking for somebody?
The young man Bo and Scratch took to be Dave Sutherland swayed back and forth, and his speech was slurred enough to indicate that he'd been drinking. The afternoon was well advanced, so it wasn't like he was drunk first thing in the morning or anything like that. Still, he was a mite young to be putting away enough liquor to get him in such a condition. His companions might have been drinking too, but they didn't appear to be as snockered as young Dave.
We're waiting for Mrs. Sutherland to get back.
If you want to buy tickets on the stage, you might as well wait until the morning. There's one due in this afternoon, any time now, and there won't be another one leaving until tomorrow.
Dave was making a visible effort to stand up straight, and he was being more careful and precise when he talked now. Two more signs that he'd guzzled too much rotgut.
Today's stage is already in. We came in with it.
Then why are you hanging around here? Go on about your business.
What'd you say, mister?
You heard me. You look like saddle tramps to me. Probably want a handout or something. Well, you won't get it here.
You're making a mistake, boy.
You're the one who made the mistake, old-timer. I'm Dave Sutherland. My ma owns this stage line, and I'm telling you to rattle your hocks.
Dave had confirmed what Bo and Scratch already suspected, that he was Abigail's younger son, but his belligerence took them by surprise. Some people got proddy like that when they'd had too much to drink, and evidently Dave was one of them. The tall, straw-haired man stepped forward.
You heard Dave? Vamoose, you two old pelicans.
You hear what he called us?
Yeah. Looks like this town isn't as friendly as we thought it was.
Hey, we're talking to you.
Oh, and we heard you. Either that or there's a donkey brand somewhere close by.
Why, you...
We'll just wait here for Mrs. Sutherland. We're not looking for trouble.
Well, you got it, whether you're looking for it or not. Now, drift or...
Or what?
Or Cully and me will make you wish you had...
Scratch nodded toward the short, broad man.
You figure the baby bull there is Cully?
I reckon.
He looks strong enough to bend a railroad tie.
Oh, he is! And you're about to find out for yourself, old man.
But dumb as dirt.
If a fight hadn't been inevitable to start with, it sure as blazes was now. Cully's face darkened with slow anger, and he started toward the porch steps. He was so muscular that his walk had a peculiar rolling gait to it. Bo made one final attempt to stave off a ruckus.
You boys don't want to do this. I'm betting your mother won't like it if there's a brawl on her front porch.
My mother doesn't tell me what to do.
And you shouldn't have mouthed off to Angus and Cully.
Hey, I'm the one who mouthed off, and don't you forget it.
Cully charged up the steps, followed closely by the straw-haired man, whose name was Angus, evidently. Scratch lifted his right leg, planted his boot heel in Cully's chest, and shoved. Cully went backward into Angus, knocking him over like a ball in a game of ninepins.
Damn it, Cully!
Both men sprawled in the dirt in front of the porch, looking surprised. Scratch hadn't seemed like he was moving very fast. His movements had appeared almost casual.
You gonna let that old varmint do that?
Angus scrambled to his feet.
Not hardly.
He had to help Cully up, because the muscle-bound man was flailing his arms and legs like a turtle that's been flipped over onto its back.
All right, Cully, we're gonna go at this different. I'll take the preacher. You handle the fancy Dan in the buckskin jacket.
Yeah. Gonna bust him to pieces.
Come on, baby bull. You tried.
Angus and Cully advanced up the steps side by side this time, moving slower and more carefully. The Texans split up. Bo going down the porch to the right, Scratch to the left.
Try not to bust up those rockers, Scratch. They're pretty comfortable. Be ashamed if they got broken.
Yeah, it might upset Mrs. Sutherland, too.
You leave my mother out of this, saddle tramp!
Angus charged, swinging a mallet-like fist at Bo's head. Bo blocked Angus's punch with the same sort of effortless ease that Scratch had demonstrated in kicking the two ruffians down the porch steps a few minutes earlier. In a continuation of the same movement, Bo's right fist shot forward and landed flush on Angus's nose. He retreated only a couple of steps, though, before he caught himself and attacked again. Bo blocked the first few blows, but then one of Angus's knobby fists clipped him on the jaw. Bo was knocked against the railing that ran along the front of the porch. With a shout of triumph, Angus crowded in on him, trying to seize and hold the advantage. Meanwhile, at the other end of the porch, Scratch had his hands full with Cully. The pocket-sized Titan was slow, but even though Scratch was able to land several sizzling punches, Cully just shrugged them off. He appeared to be able to absorb as much punishment as Scratch wanted to deal out. He swung his tree trunk-like arms in lumbering roundhouse blows that Scratch was able to avoid without much trouble. If one of those big fists ever landed, though, it would be like being hit with a pile driver. Scratch would go down hard. He didn't intend to let that happen. He darted in and out, peppering Cully's face with punches in hopes that sooner or later the fella's brain would realize how badly it was being pummeled. To his horror, Scratch suddenly felt Cully's arms snap closed around his torso like bands of steel, and he knew that he had made the mistake of getting too close. While Scratch was trying to deal with that bone-crushing threat, Bo thrust a foot between Angus's ankles as the straw-haired man tried to crowd him into the railing. Angus lost his balance long enough for Bo to hook a left to his jaw and stagger him. Bo reached out, grabbed the front of Angus's shirt, and heaved him around in a turn that sent Angus hard into the wooden railing. Angus's momentum caused him to flip over the railing. He fell to the ground in front of the porch and landed right in those cactus roses. As his flesh was pierced by hundreds of the razor-sharp cactus needles, Angus tried to jump up, slipped, and fell again, and just made his situation that much worse as he landed in the cactus again. He finally rolled clear of the spiny plants. Some of the roses had been crushed. Bo shook his head in regret at that. The blooms had been mighty pretty. He turned to see how Scratch was doing and was alarmed to see that Cully had Scratch trapped in a bear hug. Bo could see Scratch's face over Cully's shoulder. It was almost purple from the lack of air, and Scratch's eyes were open wide in pain and desperation.
Hold on, buddy!
Bo palmed out his Colt as his long legs carried him quickly to the other end of the porch. He raised the gun, reversing it as he did so, and brought the butt crashing down on Cully's skull. Cully just shook his head and kept squeezing. It took a third wallop, though, before the baby bull finally let go. Scratch slipped out of the bone-crushing, suffocating embrace and slumped against the adobe wall of the building. Cully swung around ponderously toward Bo. His little pig-like eyes still glittered with fury, but they glazed over as he took a step forward. He pitched forward to land at Bo's feet, out cold. Bo stepped over to Scratch and put a steadying hand on his friend's arm.
You all right?
Yeah. I will be once I can breathe again.
Hey, you can't do that!
Bo turned toward the young man and saw that Dave seemed more sober now. Seeing his two friends being defeated like that must have gotten to him. Cully was unconscious, and Angus was curled up in a ball on the ground. Furious, Dave reached for the gun holstered on his hip. Before he could even touch it, Bo's Colt had flipped around again so that his hand was curled around the walnut grips and he had a finger on the trigger. The barrel was centered on the young man's chest.
Don't do it, Dave. I don't want to hurt you, but I won't stand here and let you shoot me or Scratch either.
Dave stared at him, taken by surprise yet again. Clearly, he hadn't expected Bo to react so swiftly. His hand hovered over the butt of his gun as he visibly struggled with the decision of what to do next.
Mr. Creel, what are you doing threatening my son?
Bo glanced to the right and saw Abigail Sutherland striding quickly along the street toward the stage line office. The old-timer, Ponderosa Pine, trailed several yards behind her, his right arm now in a sling and bandages swathing his wounded shoulder. Bo's eyes flicked back to Dave and saw that the youngster was trying to take advantage of the distraction. He had gripped the revolver on his hip and was hauling it out as fast as he could. Dave clumsily dropped his gun as his hat went flying off his head. The weapon thudded to the ground at his feet. Abigail stopped short before rushing forward again to get between her son and Bo.
Dave, are you hurt?
No, I don't think so.
What's wrong with you? Why would you try to kill my son?
No offense, ma'am, but if I wanted to kill him, he'd be dead now. I was just trying to shock a little sense into him.
By shooting at him?
Didn't shoot at him. I shot at his hat.
What happened here? What's wrong with Angus?
Looks to me like that bullying no-count varmint your boy calls a friend finally got his needs handed to him. He's liable to be picking cactus needles out of his mangy hide for a week. He's got so many stuck in him.
Now, begging your pardon, Miss Sutherland, but Bo and me sure didn't mean to cause any trouble. These two seemed bound and determined to start a ruckus, and we were just defending ourselves.
Is that Cully Blake up there on the porch? What happened to him? Is he still alive?
Well, he's still breathing. That was almost more than I could say. He got me in a bear hug and likely would have busted all my ribs if Bo hadn't buffaloed him with a gun, bud.
So you assaulted poor, slow-witted Cully, too?
You're not listening. They attacked us.
What happened, Dave? Maybe I can get a straight answer from you?
Dave had retrieved his hat by now and stood there looking at the neat hole in the crown that Bo's bullet had drilled on its way through. He turned pale for a second, as if realizing just how close he had come to having his brains splattered all over the street.
Dave, I asked a question.
Sorry, Ma. I came along and found these two old saddle tramps sitting on the porch. They said they weren't looking to buy tickets on the stage, so I told them to move along. That's when they started mouthing off and causing trouble.
So you sicked Angus and Cully on them?
They're my friends. Sure, they stuck up for me.
And got whipped good and proper from the looks of it.
I didn't figure you'd want worthless trash like these two hanging around the place. If I hadn't come along, they might have gone inside and tried to steal something.
What do we have that's worth stealing, little brother?
Gil Sutherland's question made Abigail, Dave, and Ponderosa turn around. Bo and Scratch had seen Gil coming along the street, returning from the post office, where he had delivered the mail pouch, but the others hadn't noticed his approach.
What do you mean, Gil? There's money in there.
Not much. We'd have to be turning a profit for there to be much cash on hand. Anyway, these two men aren't thieves. They helped fight off Rance Judson and his men when those outlaws tried to hold up the stage this afternoon.
Judson hit us again?
Tried to. He didn't get away with it this time, thanks to Mr. Creel and Mr. Morton.
Yeah, blasted owl hoots might have murdered us both if those two fellas hadn't come along when they did.
Yeah, I reckon I was wrong.
You mean you were drunk and looking for trouble?
That's enough. Regardless of who started the trouble, Angus is in pain. Dave, get him up and help him down to the doctor's house.
We're giving Doc Chambers plenty of business today.
Gil, see if you can wake up Cully.
He's Dave's friend, not mine. Let him tend to him.
Dave's going to be busy with Angus, and I don't want someone lying unconscious on our front porch. It doesn't look good.
Come on, fella, I'll help you. We'll get a bucket of water from the well and dump it on him. That ought to wake up even a rock-headed rascal like Cully.
I'd like to talk to the two of you inside, if that's all right.
Sure, ma'am. We'd be honored to visit with you for a while.
Abigail came up the steps and went between them to the door. She opened it and went inside. Bo and Scratch followed. The thick adobe walls of the building meant that the air inside the office was considerably cooler. Scratch still had his hat in his hand. Bo took off his black Stetson as well and looked around the room. It was comfortably furnished with a heavy sofa and a couple of armchairs that sported embroidered slipcovers. A colorful Indian rug was spread out on the floor. More subdued curtains hung over the windows. Those were the feminine touches. The more masculine items included a large roll-top desk, a gun rack against one wall with several rifles and shotguns resting in it, a squat, sturdy-looking safe, and a big fireplace with a cow's skull mounted on the wall above it. A door led into the rear of the building. That was probably where the family's living quarters were located. Abigail went to the desk and stood beside it, rather than pulling out the swivel chair from the knee hole and sitting down. She gestured toward the sofa.
Please, gentlemen, have a seat.
Well, now that sort of goes against grain for us, ma'am, while you're standing.
This is my office, sir. I'll stand if it pleases me.
Yes, ma'am, but you just don't
understand. Sit down and shut up. The lady has something she wants to say.
Thank you, Mr. Creel. And I suppose I should thank you as well for not blowing out what passes for my son Dave's brains.
I never meant to hurt him, Miss Sutherland, but I wasn't going to stand there and let him start shooting at us for no good reason either.
No, of course not. I owe you an apology for the way I acted out there. It's just that I came up and saw you pointing a gun at my son, and Angus and Cully were hurt, and there had obviously been a fight of some sort.
I imagine those two get into fights pretty often.
They're no-account bullies. Just like Ponderosa said. Oh, I wish Dave had never started spending time with him, but what can I do? He's a grown man. Anyway, the reason I wanted to talk to the two of you wasn't just to apologize for how I acted outside. I was thinking about something while I was down at the doctor's with Ponderosa. I discussed it with him, too, and he agrees that it's a good idea.
If you came up with it, ma'am, I'm sure it's a good idea.
Well, maybe you'd better wait until you've heard what I have to say, Mr. Morton.
Scratch, ma'am. I mean, you can call me Scratch. I wasn't saying that you had an itch.
Please. What I want to ask you gentlemen is if you'd consider going to work for me.
I sort of saw that coming. Gil told us about how Rance Judson and his gang have been running roughshod over this part of the territory for a while. He said that you're having trouble finding men who are willing to work for you anymore.
I reckon most of them are worried that they might get shot right off of the driver's seat the next time those owl hoots try to hold up one of your stages.
That's exactly the case. I can't say as I blame them either. Judson and his men are bloodthirsty bandits who don't hesitate to gun down anyone who gets in their way.
Talk like that's not really likely to make us want to take the job, ma'am.
I'm not going to lie to anybody. If you're going to help me, I want you to know exactly what you're getting into.
Danger didn't seem to bother Ponderosa.
Ponderosa. Came west with us. And even before that, he and my husband worked together on the Butterfield line. We're all the family he has, even if we're not related.
With him laid up, you're going to be more short-handed than ever.
That's right. I don't have a shotgun guard, so I suppose Gil's going to have to keep on driving every run by himself.
You have two sons.
Dave helps out some here around the Red Butte station, but he won't take any of the runs.
And he's too big to take a switch to his behind, ain't he?
That's right. I can't force him to help me.
Well, it just so happens we've worked on stage lines before. We can both handle a team, and we're handy with scatterguns, too.
If you could find one more good man who's willing to help out, you could switch out the runs and give Gil a break. But even if it's just me and Scratch signing on, we should be able to help out quite a bit.
You'll do it then. I warn you, I can't pay much in the way of wages right now. Business has been slow because of those outlaws.
So what you're asking us is to take on a mighty dangerous job for not much money?
In a nutshell, yes.
We'll do it.
There's one more thing you need to know about. A little matter of a war.
The last real war we were mixed up in, it was the one between the blue and the gray. And that one's been over for 15 years.
Of course, we have gotten tangled up in a range war, too, since then.
What I'm talking about is more along the order of a range war. There's a man here in Red Butte who'd like to see the Sutherland Stagecoach line out of business. And I think he'd go to just about any lengths to make sure that happens.
I doubt if it's going to make any difference.
Yeah, we already said we're going to work for you. We don't go back on our word.
But you better tell us what you were talking about.
All right. There's a man named Jared Rutledge who has a freight line that runs between Red Butte, Chino Valley, and Cottonwood. He established it not long before Will and the boys and I moved here to start the stage line. As it turns out, Mr. Rutledge planned to begin running stagecoaches in addition to his freight wagons, but our arrival here ruined that for him.
I can see where there wouldn't be enough business in these parts to support two stage lines.
Sometimes it seems like there's not enough to support one. But that didn't stop Mr. Rutledge from buying a coach and trying to compete with us anyway. In fact, he tried to buy us out after we got the mail contract from the government. That brings in much more money for us than the passengers we carry.
Rutledge probably wanted it too.
That's right. My husband Will was still alive then, and he turned down Mr. Rutledge's offer, of course. That just made Mr. Rutledge more angry with us. He swore that his stagecoach would be running long after we were out of business. He made it sound like a threat.
Well, Gil mentioned that his father took sick and passed on. Was there anything suspicious about what happened to your husband, ma'am?
You mean, did Jared Rutledge poison him somehow? I trust Dr. Chambers. And he said Will died from the same fever that took the lives of several other people here in Red Butte about the same time. The doctor was worried that it might develop into a full-blown epidemic, but then the sickness seemed to pass. It does that way sometimes, Dr. Chambers said.
That it does.
Anyway, I don't believe that Jared Rutledge would ever resort to something like poison. I wouldn't put it past him to shoot someone he considers an enemy, but he's too full of bluster to act in such an underhanded manner.
So why do you say he's waging war against you?
We've had some incidents of sabotage. There was a fire in the barn that could have gotten out of hand and burned it to the ground if Ponderosa hadn't happened to discover it in time. Both of our coaches were parked in the barn at that time. They would have been destroyed, too. I was suspicious about that right away and went to the marshal.
Let me guess. Rutledge claimed he didn't have anything to do with the fire, and he had an alibi for the time it was set.
Of course. Without any proof, there was nothing Marshal Harding could do.
Uh-huh. Anything else?
Some other minor incidents, harnesses cut and things like that. Enough to cause delays and annoyances, but nothing that would put us out of business. Then Rance Judson and his crew of killers showed up. That's what's going to cause the stage line to fail if things keep up like they're going now.
Well, wait a minute. Are you saying that there's some connection between Rutledge and Judson?
I think it's possible.
Yeah, your boy told us Judson's bunch has been raising heck around here for 6 months or so. It was longer ago than that your husband passed away?
Will died a little more than a year ago.
Have Judson and his gang held up Rutledge's stagecoach?
They've stopped it a couple of times. That doesn't mean anything. That could be just a cover-up to make sure that suspicion doesn't fall on Mr. Rutledge. The outlaws didn't get much in any of those robberies.
But the same thing would have been true today if they succeeded in stopping your coach.
Yes, that's true. But they would have gotten the mail pouch, and that's important.
Because if you lose it often enough, the government will cancel its contract with you and award it to Rutledge's line.
Exactly. Without that contract, this business can't survive. We'd have to give up. Mr. Rutledge would win, just as he swore he would.
It sounds to me like somebody ought to go pay this Rutledge fella a visit and read him the riot act.
No, that's not what I want. Mr. Rutledge has half a dozen men working for him, and they're all dangerous. I suspect some of them are gunfighters. It's bad enough that I'm asking the two of you to risk your lives by working for me. I don't want you confronting those killers in their lair.
Sounds to me like what you really need around here is a better lawman.
Tom Harding does the best job he can. He keeps the peace here in town, and that's the only jurisdiction he has. The county sheriff and his deputies never get over this way, or at least so seldom it might as well be never. Sheriff took a posse into the Badlands once to look for Judson's hideout, but never found it.
Well, ma'am, you've told us a lot, but none of it changes anything. You asked us for help, and we agreed to give it to you. We'll stick by our word.
Darn right we will.
Thank you both. I'll pay you what I can.
Don't worry about that. We'll work for room and board until you get the stage line back on its feet. Ain't that right, Bo?
That'll be fine.
You're sure?
Yes, ma'am. Certain sure.
Well, all right. Ponderosa bunks in the barn.
That's good enough for us.
Ponderosa and I finally got Cully woke up and sent him packing.
Is Dave back yet?
No. I can still hear the yells coming from down the doc's house. I figure Angus is still getting cactus needles plucked out. Dave will probably stay with him until Doc Chambers is finished. Then they'll go off to Sharky's so Angus can numb the pain with a couple bottles of whiskey.
Sharky's is one of the local saloons, I reckon.
My little brother's home away from home.
Gil, there's no reason to talk like that.
Well, why not? It's true, isn't it? Dave spends more time down there guzzling who hit John than he does here working. If he'd pitch in more, maybe you and I wouldn't be running ourselves ragged.
Well, I've done something about that. I've hired Mr. Creel and Mr. Morton.
Hired them? With what? We don't have any money.
We still have some. Anyway, they've agreed to work for room and board right now, until things improve.
I don't think it's a good idea. Sure, they helped Ponderosa and me this afternoon, but we really don't know these men. Why, they could be outlaws just like Judson and his gang.
You said could be, so I don't reckon we'll take offense, son. This time.
For the record, we're not outlaws. You can go down to the marshal's office and check the reward dodgers he has on file if you want to. You won't find us.
That doesn't mean anything. Just because there are no wanted posters on you.
Gil, I don't know why you're being so rude. Even if they weren't going to be working with us, Mr. Creel and Mr. Morton are our guests. We owe them a little courtesy to go along with our thanks for helping you and Ponderosa.
But Creel shot Dave's hat off his head. Lord knows I felt like doing that and worse to him myself, but...
You've said enough. The arrangements have already been made. You should be grateful that you won't have to work quite as hard.
Gil didn't look grateful. He was still fuming, in fact, although he held his tongue. Bo stood up, and Scratch did likewise.
Supper will be in about an hour, gentlemen. The dining room is right through that door.
We'll be back. That'll give us time to take a look around town, get familiar with the settlement.
Have a drink, you mean? If you run into my brother at Sharky's, maybe you can bring him back with you.
Bo and Scratch didn't say anything to that. Hats in hands, they nodded to Abigail.
We're obliged to you for your hospitality, Miss Sutherland. See you later.
Ma'am.
Mother... How could you up and hire a couple saddle tramps we don't know anything about?
Oh, that boy's got us pegged pretty good, don't he?
He'd likely be even more upset if he knew that you're planning on romancing his mother.
Oh, you heard what Miss Abigail said. It's been over a year since her husband passed on. Rest his soul. She ain't mourning anymore.
Well, that doesn't mean she's looking for another husband. As if you were in the market for a wife anyway.
Well, now, that's true. I've never been the marrying kind. I might change, though, for a fine-looking woman like that. A woman with her own business to boot. Yeah, I tell you, Bo, it'd be just a pure D shame for a gal like Abigail Sutherland to waste away pining for the touch of a man.
I think she's probably got more important things to worry about, like that younger son of hers. He's liable to get himself killed one of these days, hanging around with varmints like Angus and Cully. Not to mention the trouble with Rutledge and those owl hoots lurking out there on the other side of Hell Creek waiting to hold up another stagecoach.
Yeah, I reckon we waltzed right into a heap of trouble again. Outlaws on one side, Rutledge's hired guns on the other. You know what we need?
Some sense pounded into our heads.
No, what we need is for those two young fellows we ran into over in Colorado to come riding into town so they can give us a hand.
You mean Bodine and Two Wolves? I don't think that's likely to happen. Those two are probably off somewhere getting into some devilment of their own.
Yeah, they kind of reminded me of somebody. You and me about 30 years ago.
Yeah, we'll have to handle this chore ourselves.
Bo and Scratch neared a good-sized building marked by its batwing doors and the tinny music coming from inside it as a saloon. In the fading light of dusk, a sign hanging from the awning over the boardwalk identified it as Sharky's, the place Gil Sutherland had mentioned.
I would say we'd take a look. I could use a beer.
I'm a mite thirsty myself.